party playing Magic Online pre-releases. It's the next episode of Magic the Amateuring.
Woohoo! What is Magic the Amateuring?
Magic the Amateuring is a show about Magic the Gathering for amateurs, players returning to the game, and anybody who likes to have that chuckling feeling that kind of feels like you swallowed a bottle of pop coming up from your esophagus into your mouth place.
I think you just described heartburn. So this is a show for anyone who enjoys the sensation of heartburn.
This show is for you. There's not a lot of shows for you. You probably feel like an outcast. Because
that's right. But everyone else hates their heartburn, but if you enjoy it...
We're here for you.
That's right.
My name is Maria. I'm one of your magic amateurs.
My name's Megan. I'm also one of your magic amateurs and a host of this podcast.
That's right. Can't forget that.
I'm also a 5'5" person.
I'm a 5'4" person.
Oh, I always thought you were kind of short.
Yep, that's true. Kind of short. But nationally average.
What? I'm nationally average.
I'm nationally average.
What? I am nationally average. Hold on just a second. We are going to figure this out.
All right, everybody. Megan and I started playing Magic the Gathering about 2 years ago. Wow, we got to have another anniversary episode.
Oh, man. It's coming up soon.
And we've loved the game. We've become addicted. It was fast and it was quick. Those two words mean the same thing. But what I'm trying to say is our love of the game happened almost overnight.
Oh my God. What? Okay, so the average height for women in the US is 5'4". The average height for women everywhere is 5'9".
No way.
That's what Google says.
Google, what kind of weird Amazonian women are you measuring?
Just women in the rest of the world.
Why are we so short in America?
I have no idea.
I guess Norway has a lot of women.
Yeah.
Those blonde, tall models that all live in Norway.
Wait, Google might be spewing incorrect facts at me.
Well, on the show today, we're going to do a State of the Union on Khans of Tarkir. So it was just recently released, and there's been a lot of changes to standard and to limited, obviously. So we're going to talk about what's the what in limited as well as constructed. So that's going to be pretty cool.
What's the what?
Yep.
What?
What's we're going to go over what's the what. We've got a great For the Noobs segment for you, all you noobs out there. And we've got a special thank you that I'd like to do right now to everybody who has pledged to us on Patreon.
Okay, Maria, watch out, though, because what? The average height of all Americans 20 to 29 is 5'4.5".
We're growing.
Yeah.
Creepy. Yeah. And you know, the weirdest part is if you go to a museum like in England or something and you look at the clothes and it's like 34-year-old man would have worn this doublet.
And they're tiny.
And it's like the size of something a 12-year-old girl would wear. Yeah.
Did you know Napoleon in his day was actually average height for a man? He was like 5'9". That was about average.
Yeah.
And he wasn't actually short. It was the difference between the continental and the UK measurements, like their conversion rate.
Oh, right. I heard about that.
Yeah. The skewed conversion rate made it sound like he was really small. So the UK papers made a lot of fun of him. Really, they were just,
was a problem.
Libel.
It lost in translation.
Slander.
You guys, you learn so much more than magic on this show.
You really do. Napoleon. Average height.
And that's one of the reasons you should donate and become a member on Patreon. You guys, we set up a Patreon account which lets you become a member of the show, a patron, if you will. And you can pledge a dollar amount every episode. It's like NPR or PBS.
Wait, Patreon doesn't allow you to become a patron? You have to become a patron?
Yeah.
Huh.
I know, it's weird.
Words.
So go to patreon.com/mtacast and you can support our show. Help us get some new gear, travel to new GPs, have a super great fun time on the show. Yeah. And I'd like to just thank you. We've got 12 people who are patrons right now. Matt, Joseph, Clayson, Kelly, B. Aja, sweet name, Vince, Rick, Rico, Soren, Craig, Nathan, and Ben. They have all donated to our show. So thank you so much.
You guys are amazing and wonderful.
You're awesome. But I think we can do better than 12 people, Megan.
You do?
I feel it in my heart place.
Oh, you're such an optimist.
I know.
Did you know that the tallest living man is Sultan Kosin of Turkey? He's 8'3".
8'3".
Yeah. So you think we can get more than 12 people?
I feel like we can. I think we have thousands of people who listen. And I would just, you would warm my cockles. And macaque. If you... I don't have one, you guys. I'm a lady.
I think you have to specify the cockles of what. You can't just say it would warm cockles my cockles.
Of, the cockles of my cock.
Okay. I mean,
if you supported the show, is my dirty mouth worth $1 a week to you?
Now anyway, that sounds like something else.
Okay, we have awesome rewards for you guys if you become members that'll kick in about 3 months after you've been supporting the podcast. So, we'll start getting those out to you in about 2 months. So, come on, join the party. It's a great party to be a part of.
Yeah,
we have rewards at $1, $2, $3, $5, $10. You know, whatever's right for you. So anyway, that's the end of my pitch. We'd just love to see you on there. It would mean a lot to us.
Cool.
And it'll make my cock feel good. Okay.
Oh, Maria, come on.
For the noobs, gold cards.
Whoa, what are gold cards, Maria?
Have you ever looked at a card and thought this would be better if it was pure gold?
No, it would be difficult to shuffle.
It would. It would also be very soft.
Yeah, it would.
And malleable.
It would. It probably wouldn't fit in a sleeve particularly well.
No, it wouldn't. But you could give it to a baby. Did you ever have a little gold ring when you were a baby? I think that's a thing.
No.
Pure gold rings that they give to babies and then use. I don't know. It's weird.
This is weird.
It's a thing, though.
So gold cards.
Right. They're cards that cost more than one color of mana.
Oh, and you can. We call them gold cards because instead of having, like, a red card has a red border or a black card has a black border, mm-hmm. gold cards have gold borders.
That's right.
To show that they are more than one color.
That's an easy way to distinguish them when you crack a pack. Boom, gold card. That means more than one mana casting color. And they're usually more powerful, usually, than monocolored cards.
Yes. They're also known as multicolored cards, which is important to know because there are some cards in the past which have read, for instance, destroy target multicolored creature.
Sure.
So that also refers to a creature which has more than one color of mana in its casting cost.
Right. And some sets of Magic have focused a lot on gold cards.
Ooh.
Throughout the eons.
What recently have we seen in terms of sets that feature gold cards?
Khans of Tarkir, obviously.
Whoa!
Very heavy with gold cards.
It features all of those wedges, or even some two-colored cards,
yep.
Which are also gold and fit into a sort of a scheme of one of the wedges.
We also had Return to Ravnica.
Oh, wow.
Pretty recently, which focused on two-color guilds.
Yeah.
And those were also gold cards.
Yeah, so that whole Return to Ravnica block focused on each of those guilds. And then there was Dragon's Maze, which was crazy and weird.
And I assume original Ravnica. We didn't play yet.
No.
But I also assume that had lots of gold cards.
I mean, you assume. I'm not entirely sure.
I'm pretty sure it did. I'm feeling confident. The more I think about it, the more confident I am.
That's fair.
Okay. So gold cards, if you're playing limited. Now, these present a tricky situation for you.
Ooh, why are they a tricky situation?
So, say you open up your first pack. You get a sweet, awesome, super sweet, sweet, spicy, salty gold card.
Ooh, like what?
Let's say, for instance, Ankle Shanker.
Okay.
Shankler. What is it? Ankle Shankler?
Ankle Shanker?
Ankle Shanker. There's no L in there.
No.
Ankle Shankler.
Shankler is not a word. Shankler is debatably a word, but Shankler is not a word.
Shanker is someone who shanks you in prison.
Yes.
Right? Shankler is someone who puts shackles on your ankles.
Oh, okay.
That's it. When the guard comes through, he's the Shankler.
Sure.
Okay. So Ankle Shankler is a gold card, and that is 2 white, black, red mana. So a 5 drop, and when he comes down, and he has haste, he attacks, he gives all the rest of your dudes, including him, first strike and death touch.
Yes, all attacking creatures get first strike and death touch.
Yeah, so...
He is himself a 2/2.
Yeah, so a pretty good card.
Yeah.
Maria-style card for sure. But he's gold, right? So he costs white, black, and red to cast.
Yeah.
You're gonna need all of those colors, you guys.
Wow.
You're gonna have to have a palette like Bob Ross.
It sounds like these... Nice Bob Ross reference.
Thank you.
R. So it sounds like, is Bob Ross dead?
He's super dead.
Okay.
It's just sad. It's sad because I watched Bob Ross all the time when I was little.
Yeah.
Happy little trees, happy little clouds, sad little, sad death.
Well, moving on. It sounds like there's a benefit to having gold cards because they can do some crazy powerful things.
That's right.
For instance, there's each of the cons in Khans of Tarkir, which are the 3-color cards for their clan.
Yes.
There's such cards as Anafenza the Foremost. Mm-hmm. She costs white, black, green, just 3 mana for a 4/4.
Sweet.
And whenever she attacks, she puts a counter on another tapped creature.
Yeah.
She also gets the side bonus of if a creature would go to a graveyard, it gets exiled instead.
Yeah, just because, you know, whatever.
Delve.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? So, you know, these gold cards do some really powerful things.
However, there is a drawback.
Oh, what's the drawback?
Obviously, the drawback is that it costs weird colors and you gotta have them all to cast them.
That's right. So when I look at, for instance, a cool gold card like Chief of the Scale.
Yes.
He costs black and white to cast. Mm-hmm. He's a warrior.
Yep.
And he gives, I said Chief of the Scale, right?
Yeah.
So he gives all of your other creatures plus O plus one.
Warrior creatures.
And he's all of your other warriors plus O plus one. And he's a 2/3.
Yep.
So he's a 2/3 for two, which is already pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. And if you have a lot of warriors, he gives them all a bonus.
But drawback, you got to have black and white mana both for him.
Yes. And when I think about this set, you know, especially if I'm playing multicolor, I might be playing like a lot of those lands that come into play tapped.
Right.
Either the refuges, which gain you a life, or, you know, those tricolor lands.
Frontier Bivouac.
Yeah. Those all come into play tapped. So I might not be able to play this sweet 2/3 on turn two.
Right.
So it might fit somewhere weirder into my curve. I might actually need to consider it like a 3-drop, depending on how many tapped lands I have.
Exactly. And this is a question you need to consider when you're drafting. Do you first pick a gold, powerful, super powerful card, or do you play it more safe and pick a monocolored creature so that you remain more open for the remainder of the draft?
If anyone was watching the drafting at GP Orlando this past weekend,
yep,
you can actually see a couple of different people's very strong opinions on this.
Exactly.
Because there are some players when they draft who are very willing to first pick a very powerful gold card.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some players who so highly value staying open,
yep,
that they will pick a card of much lower power in order to not commit themselves to three colors or two colors right off the bat.
Thankfully, in Cons of Tarkir, there are very powerful monocolored cards as well.
That is also true.
So I recently did a draft where I first picked Mardu Heartpiercer.
Oh, yeah.
When she comes down, yeah, she deals two damage to target creature or player if you have attacked with the creature this turn.
Yeah, just for three and a red.
Three
for
and a red.
2/3 and two damage.
That card is amazing.
Yeah.
Uncommon. And I first picked that over several more powerful, arguably, gold cards.
What kind of gold cards did you pick her over?
I believe it was a charm, Obs on charm.
Ooh, okay.
And that's a straight up, you know, exile. Is that exile creature card?
Yeah, three or greater.
Yeah, and so that was sort of a hard decision, but in the end, really not, because I think her power level is so strong that it was worth it to me to pass that card. I mean, who knows if I'm going to get past cards that are going to fit with an Obzon strategy that early in the game that I felt. Yeah. I mean, but it's not always going to be that easy of a decision.
That's true.
You're not always going to have a Heart Piercer in the pack.
Yeah. Here, let me, I'm going to give you a couple of examples.
Sure.
What if you open, say, a Siege Rhino?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. And a Mardu Heart Piercer.
Wow. That's a tough one.
Put you to the test. What do you believe?
Okay. So I've been a very strong proponent of being open in draft.
Uh-huh.
I would take the Heart Piercer.
Oh, snap.
Even though the Rhino is a super powerful, awesome card.
I think I would pick the Rhino here.
It is so tough.
It's a 4/5 for four.
That's true.
That gains you three and drains your opponent three.
But also, I do like to play the Mardu deck, so...
That's true.
That is tilting my decision.
Okay. I mean, I'm just going to straight up disagree with you, but...
Listener, do you pick the Rhino or the Heart Piercer first?
Yeah.
Tweet at us at MTAcast. Megan and I are of different minds.
Okay, here's one for you.
Okay.
I've tailored this one for you.
Okay, good.
Mardu Heart Piercer or Ankle Shanker?
Ankle Shanker? See, isn't really? That weird?
That is super weird because I think that the ankle shanker
no, I would
is prob- worse
I would
than
probably
the
take.
Rhino.
I would probably just take the Heart Piercer.
Wow.
I love that card.
You really do.
It's a 2/1.
I mean, it's a very good card.
Oh, it's almost.
It's a very good card.
But yeah, you can see that this is a tough decision. And I think we've seen some people even say that they would pick Feet of Resistance.
Yeah. Well, Feet of Resistance is
first
okay.
pick because it is a white. Yeah. And it's single colored over a gold card.
What kinds of gold cards?
Man, I'm trying to think of just like some mediocre.
What? But Feet of Resistance is good, so we have to get a good gold card.
Okay.
Feet of Resistance or Ponyback Brigade?
Feet of Resistance.
Feet of Resistance, Abzan Guide.
Oh. Well, if this is first pick?
Yeah, first pick.
God, Feet.
All right. Interesting. Feet of Resistance, Chief of the Edge.
Feet.
All right. I agree with that one. Feet of Resistance is one of my favorite tricks so far.
It's brilliant.
I really enjoy it. But that's for later from now.
Yes.
So just obviously, you sort of have to determine where your own personal priorities are.
Are you adventurous or are you careful?
It also, I think, helps to have in some ways like a mental list, whether you've read other players' set reviews, like you listen to the Limited Resources set review or you read LSV's set review on Channel Fireball. Mm-hmm. It helps to, you know, have your own power level determination for each of the gold cards, so you know when you open it, well, how highly do I think of this card? Like, is this card good enough to commit myself to two or three colors?
Will I regret not taking this other card if I end up being unable to play my gold that I have first picked? How much will I regret that choice?
Yeah, that is also fair. So it's an important thing to note.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, play some games is the best way to be able to up your evaluation of cards. And card evaluation is one of the most important things in drafting and in sealed. So if you want to get better at knowing the better cards in the set, there's really not a shortcut.
Nope.
You got to play. Even if you read something, the way it's going to stick in your brain is getting those reps in.
Yeah, ma'am.
Whether it's in life or online. Or just if you're playing in your dreams, which, you know, people can lucid dream. Have you ever lucid dreamed?
I never have, no.
So that's where you can basically control what's happening in your dream.
Yeah, I am aware.
So, like,
I mean, okay, I've never lucid dreamed, but we've all seen whatever that fucking movie is, Waking Life.
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, well, who's in it? Never mind. It's a Richard Linklater film.
Richard Shankle? Ankle Shankler?
Yeah, it's a film by Richard Ankle Shanker.
So I was saying, if any of our listeners out there are able to lucid dream, don't you think it'd be worth it to practice playing magic in your dream so that you can get better? You probably just want to have sex dreams. Who am I kidding?
Or you could go flying.
Yeah.
You could do anything in the universe.
I would definitely go flying around
you
whales.
You could do anything at all and you would choose to play magic.
Just for like one night. You sleep every night. Devote one night to playing some dream games.
This is super weird.
That's all I'm asking.
This is the weirdest thing that we've ever suggested for practicing magic.
Yeah, listeners, let us know. Do you lucid dream and have you used it to practice magic? Or just for horrible, horrible, dirty sex things, you pig. Tweet at us at MTAcast.
Wow, Judgy McChudgerpants over here.
I'm not even a level one judge. Come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Although we are all level zero.
Yes, we are.
Judge Rob, let us know that.
Remember, listener, if ever you have no reason to believe in yourself, if only because you too are a level one judge.
Level zero.
Level zero judge.
Not level one.
No, but you are level zero.
Yeah. Congratulations. Right. State of the Union. Cons of Tarkir. Boop, 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 boop. Barack Obama isn't the only person who can give a State of the Union.
That's right. Never mind. Anyways, moving on. Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. So let's start, perhaps, since we were talking a bit about Limited, let's start with Constructed.
Oh, snap.
So lots of things have changed since Cons came on the set.
Yeah.
Up is down, down is up, black is white, day is night, the moon is a sun, cheese is a pizza, and French fries are...
Good for you.
Not yet. Oh, what a great world.
Congratulations.
Oh, what a perfect world.
Oh man, did you think you needed to eat kale to get your daily dose of greens?
Wrong.
You don't have to. You can now eat French fries. You're welcome.
This is what I should lucid dream about.
So, eating French fries out of anything in the world you can do, Maria. Anything in the world.
While flying.
So, while flying, you're gonna eat French fries while flying?
Yep.
Fair. So, where were we?
Constructed.
Constructed.
Let's talk about standard.
So in standard, some stuff has already been shaken up. Yeah. And with the upcoming pro tour, things will continue to get shooken.
In Honolulu.
Oh, yeah.
Or just Hawaii. I don't know if it's Honolulu, is it?
I think it's PT Honolulu. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What?
You guys can't see, but I'm doing a dance.
Yeah. That is the weirdest. That is the weirdest dance music.
I was trying to make it sound Hawaiian.
It's like a sad trumpet.
What can I
Let's
say?
Let's all go to Hawaii and dance to a sad trumpet.
Any time in Hawaii is good time in Hawaii, sad trumpet or not.
So maybe you watched the Star City Games open in New Jersey 2 weekends ago.
I sure did.
I sure did. It was pretty sweet, and we saw some new and some old archetypes there.
I'm so happy to see some new stuff going on.
Yeah, we sure still did see a lot of the base green decks.
Mm-hmm.
I think 4 different base green decks made it into the top 8, which is, you know, 50% of the field, which is quite a bit.
With Corsair of Krufix.
Corsair of Krufix and Sylvan Caryatid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the ones in the top 8 also had some sort of splash, mostly red.
Right.
So sort of like green-red devotion strategy that involved ramping into really big monsters. You have Corsair to sort of improve your draws, allow you to play those lands off the top of your deck. You have Sylvan Caryatid also to help you ramp and shore up the ground a little bit. A lot of these decks have started playing Sarkhan the Dragon Speaker.
Yes.
Because, you know, everybody loves a 4/4 hasty dragon.
Indestructible.
Exactly. That can maybe also come down and be a kill spell if you need it.
Sarkhan, a very valuable card at the current moment.
Yes, and I think that I don't know for sure, but I think it looks like he's going to be a pretty solid staple in the upcoming months. So he might hang out at that very valuable price level that he's currently at.
Like $40 or so.
Yeah, because he's been played in that green splash red devotion strategy.
Question.
Yes.
So when we talked about fetch lands last week
and
their value, we mentioned that the fact that you might turn one up with... Wait, what was it? No, you'd have one in play.
Yeah.
And you can see your next card.
Yeah, with Corsair.
With Corsair. And then you could shuffle your deck off your fetch. Do you think people are doing that? Is anybody really doing that?
Yes, of course people are doing that.
Crazy.
What? It's pretty sweet.
I just think it's a funny interaction with a fetch land and the Corsair that... I don't know.
It's a really sweet interaction. Imagine just being like, unique. I don't want to draw that card, and I don't have to.
Boom, shuffle.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool. There's also, those green-red devotion decks, very Corsair of Krufix centric. We've also seen there was a simple black-white control strategy.
Oh, interesting.
Straight up kill spells and Elspeths. Kill spells. Is what I'm going to now call that black-white control deck.
P.S. Elspeth. Oh, I don't know if I should say it. What happened to her?
What do you mean? Everybody knows.
She bit the dust, so she's dead.
Yeah, she is super dead. Heliod was like,
Heliod did her in.
He's a dick.
Total dick, you guys.
He's the worst.
Sun god,
more like
asshole.
More like, be done with you, god.
And so, I'm, wondering, since you just mentioned black and white, if we're going to see an Elspeth from the underworld.
Oh.
Black-white Elspeth.
Maybe someday.
Could be cool.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be anytime particularly soon.
No.
Because she's not one of the 5 original Planeswalkers.
Okay.
So she shows up a little bit more infrequently than our friends, Garrick, Liliana, Chandra, Jace, and that other bitch.
Nyssa?
No. Garrick... Chandra, Liliana, Jace.
That other bitch.
What's that? Oh, come on. Ajani. There we go. Duh. I just couldn't think of what color I was missing.
Oh, okay.
You know, that
I
other
just
bitch.
Think a zombie Elspeth would be so cool.
Yeah, it could be pretty cool.
My favorite deck from that coverage was the Jeskai Tempo deck.
Oh, man. You and me both.
Seemed real cool.
Yeah, it's super sweet. So basically, it starts out with, you know, hitting the ground with some aggro creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It plays Seeker of the Way, which we mentioned last week.
And your sleeper card.
Yeah, it's a 1 and a white for a 2/2 with prowess. So it gets +1/+1 when you cast a non-creature spell. Also gets lifelink when you cast a non-creature spell.
Worth it.
And then it also played a new friend, Mantis Rider.
And I love that it plays Mantis Rider.
Why?
Because it's so unusual. Like, who thought that this 3/3 flying vigil hasty trample? What was it?
It's a 3/3 flying haste and vigilance for 3 for red, white, blue.
You know, I think it's just because I was so used to creatures not being super, super important.
Yeah.
In standard So yeah. It made me feel happy to see like this, just this creature who's just a good, solid creature.
Yeah.
Coming and being so important.
For sure. And as we saw, Mantis Rider, you know, super sweet.
Yeah.
Because it could, you know, it could just potentially land boom, on the table as early as turn three and slap some bitches down.
But it doesn't play very many creatures, this deck.
No, the other creature that it plays is a Goblin Rabble Master, mm-hmm. four Goblin Rabble Masters, which we talked about last week,
yep.
as also being one of the pillars of the new standard. Goblin Rabble Master is 2 and a red for a 2/2 goblin, and it says other goblin creatures you control attack each turn if able. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put a 1/1 red goblin creature token with haste onto the battlefield. Whenever Goblin Rabble Master attacks, it gets +1/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking goblin.
So it can get out of control really fast.
It really can. If it does not get handled soon, it just turns out just a crap ton of goblins.
But Goblin Rabble Master is not only played in this super sweet Jeskai tempo deck.
Yeah.
It's also played in a deck kind of built around it.
Yes. There are still, you know, very just like dedicated red decks, which are all about, you know, Beats some people down with some red.
Yep. Beats and defeats.
Beats and defeats. A lot of these are playing cards like Stoke the Flames, the Lightning Strikes. You know, cards that we were seeing in sort of the burn strategy before. Have also found their home with Goblin Rabble Master and in Jeskai Tempo.
So are there any other decks that are unique that you saw come out of that of standard this past weekends?
I want to go back to the Jeskai Tempo just for a second, because what's really cool about it is that it has all of this great late game reach. It has, you know, 4 copies of Stoke the Flames, 4 Lightning Strikes. Depending on the deck, it has some combination of like Magma Sprays or Magma Jets.
Mm-hmm.
Sprays obviously can only hit creatures. Jets, you know, hit creatures or other players.
They're nice in a hot tub.
The version I really like played 2 Dig Through Time.
Really?
Yeah. Which, for those of you who don't know, it's 6 blue-blue for a sorcery. And it says it has Delve.
Delve!
It has Delve for 1, which is great in this, you know, this deck is playing a lot of instants and sorceries. So you're going to have a pretty full graveyard a lot of the time. So you can potentially cast it for as cheaply as just blue-blue.
Sweet.
Which is super sweet. And it allows you to look at the top 7 cards of your library, pick 2, and put them into your hand.
Brilliant.
And shuffle, but the rest go on the bottom of your library. So, nice. You know, it has some good ways to, you know, reach out and slap across those last few points of damage with those Jeskai Charms, Stoke the Flames, Dig Through Times to help find you your burn spells.
I think playing tempo is very fun. Yeah. It's one of my favorite kinds of decks to play. You know, it's well known that I enjoy playing aggro, which I do.
Mm-hmm.
But tempo, I loved when I played Blue-Black Fairies in Modern Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And tempo, what that basically means is you're getting ahead on your opponent, doing incremental bits of damage while keeping them on their back foot the entire game. They can never quite get a reach.
Yeah, and this deck, although some people have complained about calling this deck tempo, they're like, it's just burn. It's just burning some creatures.
Whatever.
But, you know, like, Jeskai Charm does have a mode where you get to put a creature on top of their library,
mm-hmm.
Which it sounds, you know, is something we typically see more in Limited than we see in Constructed, but it actually does have an application in this deck.
Sure.
And then it also, again, has those cheap 1 and 2 mana creature removal spells. Just sort of as your opponent is trying to stabilize, you can just sort of keep keeping their board clear and getting across with maybe 3 damage with the Seeker of the Way or 3 damage with this Mantis Rider.
Right.
Until you can, you know, cast a couple of points of burn at their face and finish them off.
Nice.
So it's pretty sweet.
Any other special standard decks you want to mention before we move on to Modern?
Ooh, there is, and we'll cover this in Modern in a second too, there is a Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck.
Right.
It's, you know, it's very, very powerful in Modern, which we'll talk about in a second. But there is also a standard version of it, which got 11th at SCG New Jersey.
Nice.
This deck plays 4 Jeskai Ascendancies, which Jeskai Ascendancy is, you know, red, white, blue to cast.
Mm-hmm.
It's an enchantment. And it has a couple of very important pieces of text. The first is that whenever you cast a non-creature spell, all of your creatures get +1/+1 and you untap them. And then you also loot, so you draw a card and discard a card.
Oh, boy.
So if you play this with mana dorks...
Yeah, seems good.
Basically, you get to just... You're getting to loot into more spells. So you're getting to draw and discard. And if you have mana dorks, then you're just getting to, you know, you've untapped your mana dorks, and you can then cast the spell that you just looted into and then repeat the process over and over.
Wash, rinse, and repeat. Don't wash your decks.
And don't wash them. Until basically you have, you know, like this giant 20/20, you know, mana dork, and you can smack your opponent with it. It also plays, it hits an infinite loop with Briber's Purse, which is an artifact which says, you know, it's X, and it says it costs X, and it's X and tap, remove a gem counter from Briber's Purse, and then, it enters with X gem counters. And
sorry, I'm attempting to eat a piece of pizza.
No, I know.
It's a disaster.
It really is.
Right now, everybody. Oh, God.
Basically, you can play Briber's Purse on zero, and you've also Retraction Helixed your guy, so you get an infinite loop where you can tap your guy and bounce the Briber's Purse back to your hand. Then you cast the Briber's Purse for zero. Your guys untap. You get to loot.
Oh my God.
Tap them. You tap the Retraction Helix guy to bounce the Briber's Purse, and you just infinite loop this until you have a giant guy. Or you can also use the Briber's Purse, actually put some gem counters on it if you want to remove their blockers, if you need to.
So this deck, apparently viable in Standard, is absolutely broken in Modern right now.
Yes. Well, the crazy thing about... So in Standard, you're playing a lot of 2-mana mana dorks. You know, you have your Sylvan Caryatids, you have your Rattleclaw Mystics, you have your Kiora's Followers.
Yep.
Are generally where these are. In Modern, you have Noble Hierarchs, which cost 1 for an 0/1, and that taps for white, blue, or green. You have Birds of Paradise, which is a flying 0/1, which taps for any color of mana for 1 green. And you have Sylvan Caryatids, which, again, we already have.
Yep.
It also has, so, you know, in the Standard deck, you can only play 4 Jeskai Ascendancies. Darn. You know, it's in your 60-card deck. You just have to essentially draw it naturally.
Yep.
You have a couple of ways to help dig with using Commune with the Gods. In Modern, there's a card called Glittering Wish, and it costs white and green, and it allows you to take any card from outside the game, which means your sideboard, that is multicolored, and put it in your hand.
Sick.
So you play 4 Glittering Wishes in your main, 3 Jeskai Ascendancies in your main, and then 1 Jeskai Ascendancy in your sideboard to get with Glittering Wish. So it's essentially like you're playing 7 copies of Jeskai Ascendancy.
Yeah.
So it becomes infinitely easier to get that
your
card.
Combo. So this deck was recently played by Sam Pardee. I don't know where the emphasis is on his name.
I don't know.
And he had something like an insane amount of turn 2 and turn 3 kills.
Yes. You can also go to Channel Fireball and watch Nathan Holliday play this deck.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, obviously he's a very good player, but he's just figuring it out.
And he's just like murdering people.
And he's just killing people, you know, left and right with this deck.
So a lot of people are wondering, when's the ban going to come? Maybe not for Jeskai Ascendancy, but perhaps for Glittering Wish.
Yes, that is true. Some people are speculating that they will ban Glittering Wish because, again, that will make... You know, it makes a really big difference to have essentially 7 copies of Ascendancy in your deck as opposed to just 4.
Whew.
But I think they might wait to see if cards like Thoughtseize or cards like Abrupt Decay are going to be able to keep this deck in check.
Okay.
So
maybe not
it's
yet.
It's a possibility. You know, I think it's probably worth it to wait and see how the metagame falls out around this deck. If other decks are naturally going to be able to keep it in check, or if it really is just going to run away.
It's like survival, you know, survival out there. It's like Darwinism, you know?
Yeah.
Are other decks going to be able to survive while this predator roams around?
I don't know. Is this just some sort of crazy invasive species? Did we bring boa constrictors to Florida?
Did we bring zebra mussels to the Great Lakes?
I really hope not. Did we bring emerald ash borers to the Midwest?
Did we bring French teenage boys to a high school dance?
Is that a real invasive species? Are we having a problem with
that? I mean, they're going to overcome the young ladies with their suaveness and croissant au beurre.
And the teenage guys are just going to have no chance.
They have no chance.
No chance.
American guys, they don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Huh. Uh-oh, it's going to be a hellscape out there.
So limited, y'all.
Yeah.
It's a crazy, crazy fun format. I've done some drafts. I've played some sealeds.
It's pretty great.
I've gotten my hands dirty in the con. And
that was a weird way to say that.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my thing.
yeah.
So a lot of people are asking, is this a slower format where you can play five colors and be a crazy mofo?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a format where you want to get in quick while everybody else is being five color craziness and murder them dead before they have time to pull up their pants?
I think the answers are yes and yes.
I think you're right too.
Which is part of what makes this format so exciting.
Five color can happen and it can be awesome.
Yes, especially in sealed.
Yep.
I think is where we're seeing a lot of strength of the five color decks. I think in draft, things are a little more streamlined.
Yep.
And also, as the format goes on, people are learning to value mana fixing pretty highly.
Right.
So it's a little bit more dangerous in draft, I think, to go five color right now. Because you might not be able to get any dual lands on the wheel. There is a very strong chance that you will not see any of them come back around. You need to spend all of your early picks on them.
I found that
if you're going to go five color.
Picking up dual lands is usually what I'm doing around pack two for some reason.
Yeah.
Just because I'm kind of wanting to pick my powerful cards early. You know, if I'm picking a tri-land, I'll pick that early, obviously. But
yeah,
kind of around pack two and the end of pack three is kind of where I've been picking up my lands, I've found.
Okay, nice.
But in case you don't know, a tri-land is a perfectly reasonable first pick.
Yes.
Everybody out there. I mean, even it's perfectly reasonable to play it if you are not using every one of those colors in your deck. If you end up only using two of those colors in your deck, it is still perfectly fine to play that tri-land.
Yeah,
it's like a dual land. So there you go. You just won't gain a life off it.
Yes.
Just FYI. But one deck that people are getting pretty hyped about is a mostly two-color deck, Black-White Warriors.
Yeah.
So this is all the rage right now. Maybe too much the rage, right?
Oh, really?
Because everybody will try and draft it. And I think there's... Bless you.
Thank you.
I think there's only room at a draft table for maybe one person to try to play this archetype.
Mm.
Because it's pretty dang good when it comes together. So you've got a lot of creatures that care about other warriors, specifically Chief of the Scale and Chief of the Edge. But also you've got great cards that make more warriors, like, what is it, Mardu War Chief or something like that, who's a 2/3 for 3 if you have attacked this
Mardu
turn.
Mardu Horde Chief?
He makes another 1/1.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's cards that can get out of control pretty quickly and for not a lot of mana.
Yes.
You also have cards that make 1/1s.
Yes.
So, I mean, this deck is fast. It is consistent because it wants to be two colors.
Mm-hmm.
So watch out for this deck. I haven't had a chance to draft it yet, but I have played against a similarly aggressive deck, which was a very aggressive Jeskai deck.
Yeah.
And I was playing Mardu, so it wasn't like I wasn't aggressive as well. But this Jeskai deck just came and hit me out of absolutely nowhere, and the cards didn't even have to be that good. Jeskai kind of is a little low on its power level with its cards.
Yeah.
But what it had to back it up was Singing Bell Strike, you know?
Yep.
Lock you down, shut you out, you know?
Shut up, go away.
Cheap, force away, bounce, and just playing little dudes and just hitting you. If you can come down on turn two reliably and your opponent doesn't have a play until turn three or, God forbid, turn four, watch out.
Those are some decks where it's just like, oh, you know, like a morph is just not going to be enough.
Right.
If like your first play is a morph.
You're not going to catch up. Mm-mm. That's it. Because they also have creatures to, you know, kind of like punish you for just having that morph. Yeah. So they have prowess, right? So they can come in and gain life and beat you in combat, kill your morph if you were looking to trade. Yeah. Guess what? You're not going to trade. You're going to take it up the tailpipe.
Up the tailpipe.
I got that phrase from Liar Liar.
Oh, all right.
Classic movie.
Oh, hey, you remember last week how we were talking about a butt ton?
Yeah, sure.
First of all, I'd like to point out that I was correct. Butts weigh about 8 pounds.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
I will bow to you on that.
Thank you. This past week, I came up with a new phrase that I'm going to now use in lieu of butt ton.
Sure.
Bitch load. There are a bitch load of ways to create warriors in this set.
A bitch load.
There are a bitch load of sweet cards that you can play in a quick aggressive deck. And really,
I bought a bitch load of pita chips at the grocery store the other day.
Exactly.
Do you think that Liar Liar is the Casablanca of our generation?
What?
I think it is. It's either that or Mrs. Doubtfire, so.
Okay, I'm going to go with Mrs. Doubtfire as the Casablanca of our generation.
Oh, God. But I've also played some four-color decks in draft, and it's been, you know, it's been fine. I haven't been the happiest with that, you know, strategy super far. But I definitely think that aggressive is a way you can go, and you can make some really fun, awesome decks with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's about where we're looking at the limited state of things. It's, you know, it's shaping up to be a really exciting set of stuff.
Stuff to stuff.
It's going to be pretty sweet.
I've got drool coming out of my mouth just thinking about it.
That's gross. You stopped in the middle of that sentence and were like, no, I need to not say this.
I just was sitting at my computer drooling like a dog with rabies playing Cots of Gross. Dark
Gross. Weird.
And then when I dream at night, my lucid dreams of Cons of Dark Cure, I'm just drooling. I'm
drooling in your sleep.
Drooling in my sleep.
Gross. Gross.
Oh, God. Flavor Text Theater, Pick, Lick, or Flick. This is the game where Megan and I crack a pack, and we decide if we'd like to pick a card, lick a card, or flick a card.
That's right. Pick is obviously, you know, the card that we would pick out of the three cards that we turn over.
Yep.
Lick is the one that we're like, oh, yeah, look at that sexy card.
Yeah.
Flick is the one that we're like, no way. Let's not.
Here we go.
Okay.
All right, I'm not looking.
All right.
There you go.
All right. Let's do this.
You're got a morph token in this pack.
Oh, those are sweet. I
feel like
that.
They're doing a high level volume.
All right, we have a Summit Prowler.
Okay.
It's 2 red for a vanilla 4/3.
Yep.
We have Mystic of the Hidden Way, 4 and a blue. Can't be blocked. It has morph for 2 and a blue.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Dragon Scale Boon, 3 and a green, instant, put 2+1/+1 counters on target creature and untap it.
Wow. This is a good choice.
This is a good choice. All right, Maria, what's your pick?
All right, I think this is so hard because I love evasion.
Yeah, that's true.
I really like it because it means I have to do less combat math.
Yeah. Okay.
And evasion is very good in this set. Flying, very good, as we've GP Orlando, if you've been watching that coverage, mentioned that the skies is a good place to be, and I think that's very true.
Yeah.
And also notably, if the skies are a good place to be, the Hidden Way is also a good place to be. So,
nice.
Dragonscale Boon, though, very, very strong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Super great trick. A little suspicious, but not if you've got 4 open mana. But this early in the format, you can still get people.
Yeah, and it's nice because it sticks around. It's not just +2/+2. It's 2+1/+1 counters. So that's going to...
If it sticks, it's a real blowout.
Exactly. You get to untap it so you can attack and then surprise them the next turn.
Sure.
Or, you know, also if you're in Abzan, you're potentially giving your creature some sweet bonuses.
Man, this is really tough because that other card has morph, and morph is just... All morphs are good, I think.
Yeah, that's true. All morphs are good morphs.
So, I'm going to pick Fudge. Yeah. Fudge Muffin. I'm going to pick the Mystic, lick the scales, and flick the canyon.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go opposite. I'm going to pick the boon, lick the Mystic, and flick the Summit Prowler.
Yeah, I think this could go either way.
It really could. It might be swayed by the fact that I had a great experience with Dragon Scale Boon earlier today.
Yeah.
I was, like I said, I was in Abzan.
Yeah.
And I had Abzan Falconer out and a Disowned Ancestor.
Nice.
And I outlasted my Ancestor, but he's tapped.
Right.
And my opponent attacks with 2 different flyers that are both 2/2s. And I Dragon Scale Boon my Disowned Ancestor, so he has flying now.
That's so great.
Because he has these counters on him, and I get to block.
That's so good.
For free, because I get to untap him. It was a sweet blowout, man.
All right, hit me with 3 more.
All right, here we go. Our next set is Bloodfell Caves. That's the black red gain a life land. Rite of the Serpent, 4BB, destroy target creature. Minor upside, if it has a +1/+1 counter, you get a green snake creature token. That's a 1/1. And Salt Road Patrol, 3W for a 2/5 with 1W Outlast.
So I love the art on this this kill spell.
Rite of the Serpent.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Man, I haven't.
This is tough. This is tough.
It is another good choice. I have not played with any of these cards except the dual land. Oh man, I don't know. Is Salt Road Patrol? I mean, it seems like kind of a bitch. I mean, it's like for 4 mana, you have a 2/5 that has Outlast. It's kind of annoying, but it also kind of doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit of a house. It comes down and blocks almost anything
for a while. So I think I'm gonna have to pick the Salt Road. Lick that kill. I'm going to lick the land and flick that kill spell. It's too expensive for me.
Yeah, it's a pretty expensive kill spell. I mean, it's so funny because I feel like depending on what you've drafted so far,
it matters.
You could really go any which way with any of these three. Yeah. But I feel like I agree with you. Depending on where I am with my mana and what cards I've picked so far, I might lick the Bloodfell Caves.
Okay, have you been to the Blarney Stone in Ireland?
No.
Okay, so the Blarney Stone, if you kiss it, legend has it that you can speak Blarney for the rest of your life. And Blarney means you can tell lies and just generally be an asshole and get away with it.
Oh.
So here's the thing.
Okay.
The Blarney Stone is part of a wall in a castle that you can go to.
Okay.
And it's a tourist trap and there's like a million people there.
Okay.
The gross thing is you have to like lay on your back and go upside down and kiss it, but it is like wet from everybody else's mouth.
Okay, that's super gross.
Anyway, when you just said you'd lick Bloodfell Caves, that's all I could think about.
Great. Thank you,
Maria. It was horrible.
Thank you.
Anyway.
All right, here we go. Next one. Ooh, our rare.
Oh, God.
High Sentinels of Arashin. Or Arashin. Ooh, Dead Drop.
Oh, cool.
Or Trumpet Blast.
Nice.
I've got it.
Obviously, I'm going to pick these High Sentinels. That card is nut bones.
Lick this Dead Drop. Flick this Trumpet Blast.
Yeah, I'm not going to take Trumpet Blast unless I'm going all out Weenie Towns. So.
Dead Drop is, that card is, I think that card is first pickable.
Are you serious?
Depending. I mean, again, depending on what the rare
You've
is.
You've got to play the right deck with it, amazing. Obviously. But
it's so good, though.
I have yet to play a deck that would be like a Dead Drop kind of deck. But
oh, it's so good.
Okay.
So good.
Oh, High Sentinels. You're so beautiful. I hope one day to play with you.
All right. Here's our last one. We have Weave Fate, 3W, for an instant draw 2 cards. Alabaster Kirin, 3W for a flying vigilant 2/3. Abomination of Gadul, 3BB, flying looter, if it deals damage to a player, 3/4 with morph.
I'm going to pick the Kirin. I'm going to,
I think I pick the Kirin, lick the Abomination, flick the Weave Fate, as much as I like to draw cards.
Weave Fate's not bad, though.
It really isn't. It's very good.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to hear you say that.
No, I've played with Weave Fate.
It's quite good.
Because it's great because it's an instant. Because if you're, you can draw your cards, or you can do something else if you have to.
Oh, trust me, Maria. I know.
And the Kirin is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's in the skies, which, like we said, is a good place to be. Yeah. It has vigilance. It's a 2/3, so it can block morphs for days. So,
yeah,
definitely picking the Kirin. I'm going to have to go ahead and I'm going to lick that bird and I'm going to flick that Abomination.
All right.
I'm just not up on its 3 colors for some reason right now.
That's fair. It is what it is.
Yep. Thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us this week. As we mentioned before, if you enjoy our show and it gives you happiness in any part of your body or mind or spirit or fingernails for that matter, please become a member and join our party on MTAcast Patreon. So it's patreon.com/MTAcast. We would absolutely love to see you there and appreciate it greatly.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us online. Tweet at us at MTAcast.
Mm-hmm.
Send us an email at magicTheAmaturing@gmail.com. Or find us on Magic Online. I'm Ice Cream Socialist.
And I'm Horny_Unicorny. We love when people come and say hi. I also wanted to say thank you to everybody who tweeted at us a deck list for Pod People, as well as Snug as a Bug in a Rug.
Yeah, I was skeptical that it was going to happen, but it sure did.
We got a lot of submissions. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Those decks were, in some cases, good.
Yeah,
like, fine, you know? I was like, these decks are going to be ridiculously dumb. But some of them were, and some of them were also, like, legitimately, you could probably play that. So it was cool in both ways to see both of the funny ones and the good ones.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So thank you so much for that, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
And gals.
From the place where we're sitting, this has been Magic the Amateur.
Enjoy your day, night, afternoon, mid-morning, solstice, mid-solstice, summer solstice, equinox, butter sculpture day, hat day, fingerless glove day. Anyway, bye.
I always miss fingerless glove day.